Oscar Podcast. Episode 19 of Oscar Podcast with Craig Kennedy from livingincinema.com, Sasha Stone and Ryan Adams from awardsdaily.com. Today we're talking about Argo and its rise to prominence in the Oscar race. And at the end, we'll talk a little bit about House of Cards.
Yeah, well, Argo is really following the same basic trajectory as The King's Speech did. It's pretty much in line with that. It sort of rode under the radar while all these other films that came out in 2010 stole its thunder. People thought it was good, but, you know, oh, whatever. It's not like the greatest movie in the world. But all these other movies came out that were dividing up the vote. So you had The Fighter, you had Black Swan, you had Social Network, of course, and Inception. And all of those movies were really strong movies heading into the race from critics and box office. And they really split up the vote. And then you had kind of this other movie that was one that a lot of people could agree on that they liked and nobody hated. So you're seeing kind of a replay of that this year, I think. You're seeing a kind of come from behind a movie like Argo. The only weird missing link in the whole thing is the date change for the Academy and how that threw the race into flux with Ben Affleck missing out on the director nomination. So that's the only big difference between this year and 2010. So we'll never know if Argo would have still done what it's doing now if he'd had the director nomination or not. We'll just never know. It's one of those things you can't figure out. What I think it did was it gave people a sense of urgency about the movie to vote for it, where they might not have had that before.
It definitely propelled it into a different perception in people's eyes, because it got all kinds of traction after the nominations came out than it had before when it was seen that Affleck was left off.
Yeah, it was a weird kind of timing thing, because the Globes and the Critics' Choice had already picked Argo before the Oscar nominations even came out, so it was already on its way to maybe becoming one of the strongest contenders. But it seemed like when the Oscar nominations came out at the same time as that, it was sort of like fire on gasoline. It kind of fit.
And we never discounted it as a strong contender. We never ever discounted it as one of the three or four most likely to win. We never had cast it aside, except for just a short while when Zero Dark Thirty came along and completely stole its thunder. I'm so tired of that phrase, but there's no better word to say it.
That's really what happened. I'll never forget sitting there. It was just weird, that the twists and turns of this year's Best Picture race. I mean, in a way, you've never seen anything like it. After we saw Zero Dark Thirty and the way it was received, it really did feel like all the air was taken out of any buzz that Argo had. But what I didn't realize at the time, and what I should have known, was that Cynthia Schwartz is on Argo. And she's the same Oscar strategist who did Crash and Shakespeare in Love, and she's hardcore. She is probably the most stealth and hardcore Oscar strategist. And she's had a couple of bad years because she had Social Network and Dragon Tattoo, and neither of those went anywhere Oscar-wise. But now she's back with a winner, and she's playing it just right, and it's totally her style. Come from behind, you know, run a classy campaign, but...
How does that? So she's not associated with studio, or is she? Or has she changed affiliation with studio?
This year she did. She usually works with Scott Rudin and with Sony, But she didn't have a movie this year before Zero Dark Thirty came out, and she went over to Warner Brothers to work on... first, she was hired to work on The Dark Knight Rises, and that was her baby. And then when that got zero Oscar nominations, they transferred her over to Argo. And they have all their Oscar people on Argo. And the thing about Cynthia Schwartz is you can't discount her willingness to dirty campaign. You know, they all do it, Weinstein, all of them. She's particularly good at it. And usually I'm kind of on her side, quote unquote, but this year, not. So I'm noticing it a little bit more. But that was something that I really underestimated, was that she was on Argo. I totally forgot about that, and I should have remembered it. It was important.
I underestimated Academy's willingness to slum towards the middle. I really thought that there were just too many good, important films this year for Argo ever to have a chance. I wrote it off after Lincoln for the most part, and Zero Dark Thirty just kind of sealed the deal for me. But it didn't occur to me that those other movies would sort of knock themselves out just by being in the spotlight, and Argo just kind of quietly held it there the whole time.
It's taken us 3 years to really see what a difference this preferential voting system can make, because it really does, the preferential system really does tend toward, like Sasha, you said before, the movie that is most least offensive to most people.
Yeah, it does. Because we're not dealing with five movies. We're dealing with, you know, whatever, almost 10 movies. And in a year like this, in 2010, when the movies are really strong, you know, you have a harder time rallying the vote around a divisive or polarizing film. I remember when we were talking, all three of us, about the negative reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to make a case for Lincoln, because obviously I wanted it to win. I still want it to win. It won't, but I really wanted it to. So I was looking at the reviews, and I was looking, and I, for the first time ever since the race, because at that time Argo had not won a single thing. Mm-hmm. But I'll never forget this as being a really powerful moment for me. Was I was looking at those negative reviews, and I was looking at past winners. And they were like maybe 10 negative reviews, 12 negative reviews, a very small amount. And I looked at them, and of course Zero Dark Thirty had the least amount of negative reviews. But then Argo only had like 10.
Mm-hmm.
And Lincoln had 17, and my mind goes, oh, my God, Argo. And then my other mind said, no, 17's okay. Come on. You can find a movie that had 17 negative reviews. Come on, keep looking, you know. I'm trying to fit a square.
Best peg. Picture winners, you mean, that had that many winners. Negative reviews.
But it was probably the only moment, other than when I first saw Argo at Telluride, that and even then, when I liked that movie and I put it at the front runner, deep down I thought that movie's not good enough to win. So funny, like I just thought it's a popcorn movie. It's funny. It just doesn't have any kind of heavy gravitas to it, and that's why I thought it didn't have a chance. But when I looked at those negative reviews, the little tiny instinct in my head was going Argo, look Argo.
Yeah.
But I ignored it. So oh well.
Turns out the lack of gravity is what I think catapulted it. It was the gravity that held the other films back, because inevitably when something is meaningful, it's going to piss somebody off. And those other movies, all to one degree or another, pissed enough people off that they didn't make it into their top tens.
And nobody hates Argo. It's really hard to hate Argo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even now I find myself reminding myself how much I actually did like the movie, because I'm annoyed that it's going to win the Oscar, but it's not the movie's fault necessarily. So I'm trying not to be bitter against the movie.
I loved it the first time I saw it. I really, really, really liked it. Liked it less the second time, and I liked it even less than that the third time. I just think it's going to, the more it ages and the more people watch it, the more it's going to seem and just really on the surface, it's a shallow movie.
Right.
I think.
I had a hard time. I loved it when I first saw it. I saw it again with Craig, and he said the most smartest thing about it, which was that Affleck really handles the different tones well. So, I mean, when you think about it, the one nomination it really should have gotten was director. It was not badly directed. The directing is maybe the best thing about it. But he handles suspense and comedy and all these things all at once. He juggles them, and he hews close to the script, and he made a very, very good, very competent film.
And those are hard things to mix, too.
Hard,
I mean, you can have all those things in a film, but sometimes it's really jarring. Sometimes they seem really inappropriate or off-key, but Argo didn't have any of those off-key moments.
No, and it's a movie, when you think about it on the positive side, that you can put anybody down in front of it. You could take it to Alabama and put it on, and they'd like it. You could take it to, you know, Canada or France or...
Maybe not Canada.
Oh, sorry. That's the one place you can't take it is Canada.
Yeah, don't take it to Canada. Don't ask them about it.
Sorry. But you know what
I know what you mean.
My brother could watch it. My sister could watch it. Anybody could watch it, and they would like it. And that's, you always forget, because you get caught up in films that stir your soul and move you and inspire you to write essays, for me anyway, you know. I get caught up in that, and I think, God, everybody really needs to see how great this movie is. And I forget that most people don't go to the movies for that reason. They don't. They go to let go of their lives and to sit down and be entertained for a couple of hours. And Argo's the one movie that does that. It just doesn't ask anything of you. It gives everything back to you in a really funny, very light, not too heavy way. So
it doesn't challenge you at all.
Not at all. But the problem with that for me is that, as an Oscar person, is that I tend to think that the awards should mean a little bit more than that. But they're not. They're just a kind of a populist people's choice, a little bit above a people's choice kind of, you know, this is what the people thought in 2012 was the only movie that they could all agree on as best, you know. I always tend to think that it should be more like the Nobel Prize or the Pulitzer Prize or, you know, something where they give a lot more thought to it, and they say, you know what, you look at the level of difficulty, you look at what it says, you look at, you know, its lasting effect and impact and where it will sit in our canon of great films. That's how I sort of see the Oscars, and that's why it's always going to be a frustrating relationship for me, because it's never going to be that. It never was that. I mean, maybe for a couple of years in there, like when No Country won or The Godfather's won.
I haven't proven this yet. I don't really have any examples to back it up, but I just really feel like that when The Hurt Locker wins or when No Country wins, only because there wasn't a really good populist film that year that took people's attention away from it. I just think that if The King's Speech and The Hurt Locker had been the same year, The King's Speech would have won.
Yeah, I think so too, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also remember The Departed year, and I was blogging then, and lest we forget, a lot of people like Chris Tapley didn't think No Country was good enough to win. We were talking about that, Ryan, when we were looking through our old comments and how we were sweating that night thinking No Country might not win. But with The Departed, they had Little Miss Sunshine that had won the Producers Guild and the SAG, and everybody thought that it was going to split, where it was going to be Martin Scorsese for director and Little Miss Sunshine for picture. But for some reason, I knew it wasn't going to, because The Departed was better. But I was really alone on that. I mean, literally, I keep returning to that year, because that was totally my glory days.
Well, I can remember there was even some nervousness that, like, Juno could win Best Picture. You know what? That was really in the air at the time, that movies like Little Miss Sunshine and Juno could actually win Best Picture. But looking back on it, you think, how in the world could we ever have thought that? How could we have been worried about anything like that? Because in retrospect, they look so insubstantial.
But not compared to lately.
Like, no, that's true. Yeah,
and Argo and The Artist and. The King's Speech, you know, I have to sort of reevaluate that, because even though I didn't think it was as good as any of the movies, I still don't, that were up for Best Picture. Mm-hmm. But at least compared to The Artist and Argo, King's Speech did have...
It was smart. It was a smart movie. It was intelligent. It had really excellent acting, which is something that that I don't think that Argo doesn't really have the acting going for it.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're all really good movies in their own ways. And I think that for a lot of people, that's good enough, you know, and that's fine. That's what the Oscars are about for a lot of people. I am marveling at how, and I literally am the only one in this whole group of Oscar bloggers that even thinks about this at all. But and it's probably a lot to do with you guys, you know, and how you look at film. You know, you're not both of you, Craig, like, you are somebody who has always chafed against the Oscar race. You know, the movies you like aren't movies that win awards, right?
Yeah, no, the No Country year was sort of an accident, or it seemed like an accident. I still can't believe that happened, actually. It's like, wow, the Oscars actually picked the best movie of the year. I don't believe it.
Right. And then, Ryan, you have all this, you have much more sophisticated taste with foreign films and art films than I do, than I ever have or ever will have. But the thing is that we all know that the 70s was like the heyday for Oscar, right? And everybody is always coming down on the Academy for their lame choices. But for the first time this year, they pulled out the guilds from influencing them. And they just said, here, Academy, you pick what you think is the best. And for the first time, the five the directing branch picked five really great movies. I mean, okay, you can argue all you want about Silver Linings. Let's just set that aside for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Silver Linings is like whatever, the anomaly. But the other movies, yes, it came at the expense of Catherine Bigelow for Zero Dark Thirty, and it came at the expense of Ben Affleck for Argo. But it was unpredictable. And it they honored two really, really, really great movies. So, you know, I feel sort of weird about sitting there and you know, criticizing them for that when they did exactly what people are always complaining that they never do. They went against the general consensus. They went against the status quo, and they picked what they liked. And what they liked happened to be kind of cool, you know?
The director especially picked some very cool choices, and that's a pretty, if it's talk about sophistication, the directors who make it into the Academy are really the creme de la creme of Hollywood, right? I mean, they are the big guys. They are the big bosses of Hollywood, the best directors who are in the director's branch of the Academy.
Yeah, and so for the first time, we're looking at five directors standing there with their dick in their hands. I mean, it's like, what? they're not going to win Best Picture. It's the weirdest thing. It's like the Phantom is hanging over it, and that's Ben Affleck. He's the one that everybody wants to award, and he's not there. And it's really weird. It's an Oscar year that I've never lived through and that I can't find in Oscar history at all. It just, changing the date threw things off so dramatically that you're seeing something happen that's never happened before at all, ever. And it's the weirdest thing. It's totally messing with my head. And I'm starting to, my mind is starting to go to places like, if this is going to be the Oscars from now on, you know, I can't make sense of it. I wouldn't want to blog in this kind of.
Well, let's hope that it's not. Let's hope that it could be. I mean, because we know there are years that are, there are anomalies. So let's just hope that this is an anomaly. And that it's not a trend, because just because it happens once that's not enough for a trend. If it happens next year, then we have to worry.
Right. I mean, I guess I just mean that, like, what drew me to the Oscars in the first place a long time ago in 1999 was I was asking myself, why did Citizen Kane not win and How Green Was My Valley did? And it seems like such a simple question to ask. And people must have laughed at me over the years when I brought it up, because it does seem obvious to me now that I know about the Oscars. Well, John Ford had won Best Director twice, and he had yet to win Best Picture. And Citizen Kane got hit like Zero Dark Thirty did with a whole bunch of scandals, you know, they were threatened to be sued by William Randolph Hearst, and it was getting blocked at every turn. It did get the Zero Dark Thirty treatment. So it's obvious now why. It's also obvious given their taste. Right?
And I'm not even sure that a lot of it was Hearst, for sure. A lot of it was their fear of Hearst and the media machine that he had going back then. But some of it might have been true that here's this upstart who's never been to Hollywood before. He comes and tries to show us how to do our job. He's only been here 6 months, and he's directed the greatest movie of all time. You know, who do you think he is? So there might have been a little bit of that among some people.
Yeah. And you know, it seems crazy for someone like me who I studied to be a writer, I studied to be an actor, and I tried to be painting, all in hopes of becoming a filmmaker, all in hopes of doing what all these other people are doing, and I'm just sitting here blogging about. And so it hasn't really come to something significant for me now after all these years, especially seeing the way it's kind of fallen apart this year. Probably because deep down I like structure and I like the picture. I like Best Picture with Best Director. And I don't know. It's just, it's a really strange year. That's all. That's all I want.
You like it to make sense.
Yeah. I like it to make sense. And even when it doesn't make sense, I like it to sort of follow certain rules, you know, and this year it's not. It's like people like this movie. They like Argo. And I feel like I'm, and I like it too, you know, I do. I like the movie. I like him, you know. Ben Affleck is a great guy. He's like a super nice guy. I happen to think that when I'm really honest with myself, that The Town is probably a better movie in that it's a little more risky. It's a little more interesting. It's a little more Ben Affleck's vision instead of George Clooney's vision, which is what Argo is, you know. Anyway, I don't want to...
He even said, I think I mentioned this in the last podcast, so I'm apologies if I'm repeating myself, but Affleck even said in front of the Academy audience at the screening that he had learned to get good material and just kind of stay out of the way. So he wasn't trying anything fancy with Argo, and it shows, and it's interesting that that's the film that he's being recognized for. And I think David O. Russell is in a similar situation. He hasn't won the Oscar yet, but he started getting Oscar attention by toning down the auteurist vision that he used to have. Consequently, I don't think he makes as interesting of movies as he used to make, but they're certainly more popular and they're more awards worthy, or not awards worthy, but more awards magnets.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had considered the thought that a popular movie would end up winning the Oscar instead of a good movie. But all along, I was fearing that it was going to be Silver Linings Playbook. And that's how much I had written Argo off.
Yeah. It still might be Silver Linings Playbook.
Do you kind of feel like it's that weird of a year that really anything could still happen? I mean, if you're a betting person, you sort of have to bet on Argo, but I won't be shocked if it doesn't win.
You have to bet on Argo, but at the same time, it just weirds me out. It's like, I know I have to force myself to do it because there's no other choice, but it's the weirdest, most inexplicable thing to see that happen, to see all this go down the way it's going down. I mean, Academy history has had this happen twice, and that was with Apollo 13 and The Color Purple. And back then, they didn't have the same amount of awards that they have now. Critics' Choice weren't as big as they are now. And they weren't, I don't even know if they were around then. Yeah, I think they might have been. I think Apollo 13 did win there, but actually, I can't remember for sure. But in both instances, the Academy said, uh-uh, hold on there, Sparky. They gave picture and director to someone else, Sidney Pollack for Out of Africa, and then Mel Gibson for Braveheart. But in this race, Argo is the Braveheart because you have the sexy, hot actor who's charming everybody along the way, and that's really what the Academy was voting for with Braveheart. So it's an interesting thing. That's why you can't really deny Argo's power. At the same time, let's talk about the awards that Argo could win if it does win. Okay, it looks like it's probably going to take...
Editing, we know for sure.
And screenplay, sad to say, away from Tony Kushner. I know, right? I can hear the pain in your voice. But it really has to win screenplay to win Best Picture, I think, unless it's just really one of those weird, freaky years. Could it win Supporting Actor, do you think, for that, Alan Arkin?
You know, I don't know. I'm surprised Alan Arkin won the first time he won, so it could happen with that guy.
He didn't win in the SAGs, right?
No, but I mean, if I'm talking about For a Little Miss Sunshine, he won.
No, but I'm saying that's the difference. Did win the SAG.
So I'm going to guess that people who put Silver Linings Playbook at number one, which a lot of them are going to be doing since the Weinsteins are coming on really strong, they're probably campaigning. The two teams that really, really want to win are Argo and Silver Linings, and they're all of them out to win. David O. Russell really wants to win, and he needs to win because apparently he's bankrupt. And if he wins the Oscar, that'll help his career significantly, and it'll help him pay and dig himself out of debt. So that's why he's motivated to go meet with Joe Biden in Washington and pull out all the stops, have Robert De Niro do the star and cry on TV. It's the Oscar Weinstein playbook as you're seeing it right now, and we'll see if they can come from behind and win. I've seen them do it before. This is how they got The Reader in. But whether it can win or not with a preferential ballot is another thing. So you have to try to figure, well, if a lot of people switch to Silver Linings for number one, what's going to be their number two? I don't think it's going to be Lincoln. They seem to be on opposing sides, those two camps.
I would say that we're very different types of people who would put Lincoln and Silver Linings at number one and number two. So I would think they would be on opposite ends of the scale. Yeah. The world's upside down for people who put Silver Linings at number one. So I would say they would put like Argo and Les Mis at number two and three.
See, that's why Argo is such a huge threat, because it will absolutely get those number two votes, if not number one votes. So it's pretty much a done deal for Argo. The more divisive a film, the lower it's going to be on ballots. I could see it coming in number five, even on most ballots, you know. So the way people are acting about it, even though it's, you know.
Right. It's hard to see it coming in last. Argo, nobody's going to Argo at number nine on their ballot, probably, or even eight. It's going to be up there in the upper levels.
It's Hurt Locker territory, so it's definitely going to be crowding up to the top. It's so many things at once, you know. And if they don't like Argo, they're going to like Silver Linings and then Argo. Let's say they like Lincoln, they're still going to pick Argo for number two. You know, it's like Argo is always going to be someone's number one or number two choice.
It has broad appeal, even if it doesn't have passionate appeal.
Mm-hmm.
So who's going to win Best Director? We know it's not going to be Ben Affleck. That's the only thing we really know about the Oscars.
Good God. I don't know. The BAFTA did not help, did it? It's like nobody's won Best Director. Nobody. Except him.
Yeah.
You know, except Ben Affleck. He's the only one who's won. Mm-hmm. It's very, very strange. So if you're looking down the list and you're going, Argo is my favorite movie of the year, what's going to be your best director? Are they going to go, oh, I might as well give it to Spielberg? Or are they going to go, I hated that movie, I'm going to give it to Ben Zeitlin?
I have a bad feeling it's going to be Silver Linings Playbook, in which case the entire evening will be a complete disaster in my book, and I may have to think about not paying attention next year. If I pick any of the other four, it'll be a good night, because all the other four movies that are in the directing category were in my top 10 of the year. So it's not the best year. It's not the No Country for Old Men year, but it's okay. But if Silver Linings wins for Best Director, then... I can't see that.
I really can't. That's the one thing I can't see. I can't see that the weakest of the five candidates is going to be the winner. I don't see how that can happen.
But it's a movie that most people like. That's what scares me.
I know.
And if they can't vote for Argo in the category, so maybe that will be their second pick.
Right. I hear that. I totally hear that. I could see it happening to him. And the only reason it doesn't irk me to my core is because Argo's winning Best Picture. And it's like, that already irks me to my core.
Your core is already irked.
It's already been irked. And then the only upside to David O'Rourke... Because here's the thing about Lincoln, that the additional problem for me with Lincoln not winning is that I think Kathleen Kennedy fucking deserves to win. She's a woman producer who's been nominated more than any other producer and not won an Oscar. And I think that she deserves it. And here we are, you know, Ben Affleck and George Clooney both already have Oscars, and they're now going to get Oscars for Argo, which is so lame. And Kathleen Kennedy has no Oscar, and she took time off during all her whole career working with Steven Spielberg. She took time off to have a kid during Schindler's List when he won the Oscar, so she didn't win then. Yes, winning an Oscar doesn't mean jack, but for a producer who's put in almost 40 years of work and done some great things and is a fucking woman... And they're not going to give her the Best Producing Oscar. So I kind of feel like Steven Spielberg already has two directing Oscars. Ang Lee has one. You know, there is not going to be any urgency to award them. I feel like if they're going to give Lincoln director, they will give Lincoln picture. And I think also if they're going to give David O. Russell Silver Linings director, they're probably going to give Silver Linings Best Picture. It's just my thought, but... I could be wrong. I don't know. The ones that we have to compare it with were all 5 movie years, not 10 movie years. So it's possible that Argo still wins and David O. Russell's Best Director. I think that after the BAFTAs today, when it won, surprisingly won Adapted Screenplay, kill me now, that people are going to make that leap and say it's going to be David O. Russell to win Director.
Aye, aye, aye.
Silver Linings won the Best Adapted at BAFTA.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where were you, Craig?
I don't pay attention to the Baptists. I never have, and I never will.
I think that's awesome.
That was probably one of the biggest surprise of the afternoon for me when Silver Linings won Best Adapted Screenplay at the Baptist.
I know, me too. And they have about the same amount of voters as the Oscars, and this year they did it differently. They did it exactly the way the Academy does it, and they've never done that before in their whole history. Usually they have all the members nominate in the specific categories, and then just the specific categories vote on the winners, which is totally ass backwards.
Yeah.
But that's how they did it until this year. And then this year they had the different branches nominate and then the whole Academy vote. So the whole Academy voted, and that's the first time you've ever seen. Actually, I think that's the first win for screenplay for him, for David O. Russell.
The first major one that I can think of, yeah.
Yeah. It's the first major one because it's been split between, Lincoln and Argo really have been splitting the two main screenplay awards. So the WGA is coming next weekend, and since Argo won the Scripter.
I just cannot get over that. I cannot even still can grasp entirely that they gave Argo the script. You know, I thought that the U.S. of all people would have respect for a more literate script than that.
Well, and also Doris Kearns Goodwin. I mean, it's supposed to reward the source material and the screenplay. That's what they used to do, but clearly they don't. All I can figure is, despite the fact that it's made that much money and that it was number 5 on the top 10 list, the people hate Lincoln. They just hate it.
Well, there are some people, I guess, who really do. I can't imagine that there are, but there are, apparently.
Yeah. But anyway, so the WGA is coming up next weekend, and the fact that they gave Lincoln already the Paul Selvin Award tells me that, and plus the Scripter tells me that Argo will win the WGA, which means that Argo will win the Oscar for Adapted Screenplay, unless somehow the Academy gets it in their mind that they want to rebel. Which would be
and if they do, then Silver Linings could do that at the Oscars, right? Like it'll happen today with the BAFTAs.
I have no idea. All I can hope is that Argo and Silver Linings split the vote and Lincoln wins that. Tony Kushner wins.
Mm-hmm.
I think if Tony Kushner won, it would be like the coolest thing. And I think Tony Kushner and Daniel Day-Lewis, that would be a fine take home for Lincoln. But as it looks like, Lincoln's going to join only one other film in Oscar history with 12 nominations, and that's Johnny Belinda, I think, which only won one Oscar for acting. Let me make sure I have that right. It's either Johnny Belinda or, Johnny Belinda, I think, won for Jane Wyman, and that was it.
She was David O. Selznick's wife or something at the time, somebody's wife, wasn't she? That was behind all that, I think. Another strange situation.
And it won. I think Casablanca was the one that beat it. Let me see. It was 1949, so that was after they moved the 10. No, Hamlet. Shitty old Hamlet won.
Shakespeare was a hack.
Yeah, Johnny Belinda only won one Oscar for acting with 12 nominations. So, but you can't go through Oscar history and find a year that matches this year, because in every instance there's a director pairing. It's more likely that David O. Russell and Silver Linings would win history wise than Argo winning. But Argo is too powerful. It's too strong. It's too much, too well liked. There's no reason to hate it. It has to win Best Picture. Bizarre, but that's how it's going to go. I'm not saying it's bad. I just think in terms of Oscar history-wise, it's bizarre to see it go down like that. Now that the director picture stat's going to have been broken, where the directors can't call the shots anymore, for years they have, except for one in modern times, and that was Driving Miss Daisy. But that guy, Bruce Beresford, he didn't get a Globe or a DGA nomination either.
I don't think the Directors Guild is going to let this happen again next year, though. I think that they're going to allow the Oscar nominations to come out before they've spoken.
Well, the Oscars changed their date after everybody already set their timeline.
Yeah.
And Chris Tapley thinks that they did it to curb the campaign spending, because it did. It basically sliced everybody's take in half.
Mm-hmm. That's a theory. I don't know why they would care. I don't know why the Academy would care how much anybody spends on campaigns.
I don't know why they would either, but they do. They care. Mm-hmm. They care about campaign spending because they want it to be more about the movie that deserves it instead of the movie that's being paid for to win.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Chris thinks. But to me, mm-hmm. I don't know why they did. I think they said it was to give more time between the nominations and picking a winner so that voters had more time to ruminate.
I do like that.
Yeah, it seems to me like they were trying to stop this sort of thing from happening, this unstoppable momentum of one movie taking over. I mean, if I were them, I wouldn't want the guilds telling me what to do. And, right. and how it looks now since The Hurt Locker, since they switched to 10 nominees, the guilds have told the Academy how to vote, and the guilds are now the Academy. That there hasn't been a disconnect since they went from 5 to 10. It's been solid all the way through. DGA, PGA, SAG, I think. Because that was The Hurt Locker did not win SAG. But King's Speech did. The Artist. Did The Artist? No, The Help won the SAG. Okay, so forget the SAG. But the DGA and the PGA were pretty solidly dictating what the Academy does. So, and then they're going to do that again this year. With or without the directors. To me, it's an interesting experiment because I always thought that the directors really did have... I always figured that the guilds kind of guide the Academy anyway. Like, the Academy's kind of too lazy or busy or whatever to really hone down the winners. And they let the guilds do that for them. And then they look at the selection that the guilds have and they decide between those which ones they like.
Mm-hmm.
They let them kind of do the work. And, you know, that was definitely proven this year when the Academy had to nominate without the guild's influence. It showed how different that they think. So, and then it was dramatic. It was a dramatic difference between what the general consensus was. But if it turns out that Argo wins Best Picture, the general consensus wins. And the Academy is just one rung, you know, in a long sort of pattern where everybody decides what wins.
I hope that this is not a new trend that we're seeing, but I don't think that 1 year is enough to set a trend. And I do think another thing that's really extraordinary about this year is what we've talked about many times before, just how many extraordinary movies there are this year. Mm. I can't remember any past years when I have felt like if any of four different directors wins Best Director, I'll be happy.
Right.
But I can say that this year. I would be happy if any of four directors won Best Director. I would be okay with that. And likewise with Best Picture, I could probably say that I would be pretty happy if four or five different movies won Picture. Of course, I have my favorite, but I'm not going to be destroyed unless something like Silver Linings wins.
Well, you better prepare yourself. Cause really
no. Well, if that happens, I mean, if Silver Linings wins, then I hope Jackie Weaver wins. I hope Robert De Niro wins. I hope that it just sweeps.
Yeah,
I hope it's just ridiculous. I just hope that
that's
they make a total ass of themselves.
I am really, really hoping, and I know it never comes true because anything I want, I never get. But I'm really secretly hoping that the Academy totally rebels and just goes 100% in a different direction. That would rock my world so bad. But here's the thing I have to say about Argo. Two things I have to say. One, Ben Affleck does not deserve what's coming to him after this. You know, he's going to get, and his movie is going to immediately, the second it wins, a backlash will start. And he will become a joke like Paul Haggis did. Hopefully not. Hopefully he'll just keep doing good work and he'll prove that that wasn't the case. I hope he doesn't become what happened to Paul Haggis after Crash. But... so that's one thing. I think that Ben Affleck deserves to win with a director nomination legitimately so that it's unquestionable. So it's not poor Ben Affleck. It's actually this movie deserves to win, number one. Number two, like both of you were saying, I don't want to get into this. I hope another movie wins so that Argo loses. You know, I don't hope that. I just hope for the sake of what I know the Oscar race to be, that the Academy rebels against what the general consensus is telling them to do. That's what I hope. But it doesn't, I don't want to make that out like I hated Argo. God, I don't at all. I love that movie. It's funny. It's great. It just happens to have the bad luck of standing next to other movies that sort of tower over it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean it's a bad movie. It just means it's not as good as some of the other movies.
No, yeah, I don't think Affleck is in danger of getting haggis because Argo is a much better movie than Crash was.
Haggis. And Affleck, I think, haggis, I like that verb. But I don't think so either, because I think that we all can agree that Affleck is a better director than Paul Haggis. And so he's not going to fall into the same rut, because he just never will, because he's better than that.
Yeah, but Paul Haggis is not a bad director. He isn't, I don't think. I mean, he didn't have... See, the problem with a lot of the awards now is that we award people before they have a body of work. And there are some, like Ang Lee and Steven Spielberg and, Quentin Tarantino, I suppose, who've... Coens, you know, and Woody Allen. Their work... Woody Allen won very early on in his career in 1976. But, of course, he won director along with it. The problem with Argo isn't that it's so much better than Crash. It's that he doesn't have a director nomination to go with it, and that's going to shine kind of badly on that movie as the years wear on, especially when it's up next with Zero Dark Thirty, Lincoln, Beast of the Southern Wild, Amor. It's just going to look... And then the movies that didn't even get nominated, like Dark Knight Rises and The Master. I mean, The Master. I can't believe that didn't get a direct... If you just
I do have to step back just a minute before we move ahead. I will have to say that I do think Haggis is a bad director. I can't think of any movie of his that he's ever done that I like. He's a bad director.
Well, what movies did he do?
Yes.
He did.
He's a bad writer, too.
What he's a bad writer, and he's a bad director.
All right, fine.
I think. I mean, if you can think of an example, then I might want to reconsider. But I mean, what was the thing in the Valley of
Elah? But he also he also wrote Million Dollar Baby, your favorite movie.
I know. See.
No, but see, here's the thing about the unfortunate luck of Paul Haggis. By the way, had a director nomination, but the unfortunate thing about Paul Haggis is that, you know, Ben Affleck... We don't know what kind of director Ben Affleck is, because this movie Argo totally departed completely from his style. Mm-hmm. His style before, I think, is really incredible. He was aiming more for Clint Eastwood with The Town, which I think is a much better movie, more interesting movie than... It's not more general audience friendly, but I can kind of see why he wants to win this time, because, you know, The Town got so close and then it was shut out at the last minute. Like, it got a PGA nomination. It was really close to Oscar, but the preferential ballot squeezed it out. But he challenged his audience with that movie. He was trying to do something. He had female characters who were real and not like they are in Argo, which are paper cutouts, you know. But Argo is give the people what they want, just like Silver Linings is. That's a really good observation. They're both like, okay, we're going to tamp down our style so that we can get the Oscar out of the way, and then maybe we'll go back to making visionary great films again, you know, which is what I really hope he does. I hope he doesn't take this reward as a confirmation that this is the better way to direct. I hope he keeps going in the way he was going before, which is, I'm trying to say something interesting.
Somebody said that his next project may be another Dennis Lehane novel. Is that right? Have you heard that, Craig? Have you heard anything about this?
I haven't.
Yeah, Dennis Lehane has written a really well-received historical novel about New York that takes place in the early 20th century, and that may be the one he's thinking about doing next. I'm not sure.
That's good, and I hope it's good. You know, I hope he doesn't choke, which a lot of them do once they win an Oscar. They choke if they're not with their feet heavy on the ground. You know, like a lot of directors are. Mm-hmm. He's so new to it all. You know, I just hope that. It's sort of like when George Clooney had Good Night and Good Luck, which was so well reviewed and people loved it so much. It's definitely a more interesting movie than Argo, but it's not a crowd pleaser like that. Mm-hmm. But what if he had gotten left off the director nomination? And everybody loves George Clooney, and I wonder if that would have ever snowballed and transformed the way people looked at that movie. I'll always wonder that, you know. But it doesn't matter. Time to put Oscar 2012 to bed.
Just about. I mean, that's sad that we can always do that 2 or 3 weeks before the actual night of the awards, because I used to look forward to it. And I still do look forward to it, of course, but it just seems like it's almost like the death march at this point, you know, every year.
I just have to, like, take a Vicodin. Because, you know what's so... Even though I try to tell my rational body, look, Argo's going to win, everything's going to be fine, my physical body doesn't react that way. Like, I get the adrenaline dump, and my heart starts pounding, and I literally, like, when Daniel Day-Lewis was on the SAG, about to win the SAG, I had to get up and walk into Emma's room and just stand there, because I was so afraid that they were going to say, Bradley Cooper!
No, that's what I thought was going to happen today, when after Silver Linings won Best Screenplay, I thought, well, that's it, Bradley Cooper is Best Actor. The Brits are just going to go all out for Silver Linings Playbook.
Did you see the picture of David O. Russell when Emmanuel Riva won?
No, I did not.
He was so mad. He was like, that somebody took a picture.
Oh, I see.
When he, right after he, right after they called him, he's giving this face. And she looks so mad, too. I think that's the first time Jennifer Lawrence has ever lost, you know?
Right, yeah.
But how do you not award Emmanuel Riva? Can we just talk about that for a minute?
Exactly. Right. How I mean, if she can win, and if Kushner can win, then Oscar night would be okay for me. It's like when, as sad as it was when Fincher and Social Network lost, when Aaron Sorkin won his Oscar, that kind of made the evening okay for me.
That's the thing. That's why it's different for me. That's why people keep saying, oh, why are you taking it so personally? Well, at least it was winning something, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I know it's dangerous to get into this mindset of a film is validated if it wins an award. You know, I really have to try hard not to think that way, because some asshole on Twitter was chiding me and saying, oh, the awards experts say awards don't mean anything, you know. But I say it as a mantra to remind myself, because I do get caught up in that. They mean something. It's a failure if they don't win. Oh, poor Tony Kushner. You know, and you're always trying to tell me that, Ryan, that you know, it's not, oh, poor Tony Kushner. He wrote an incredible screenplay. That's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's not being rewarded. It's not getting awards, but...
But I do know what you mean. I feel bad for him. Even if he's being really classy and magnanimous about losing all the time, I would. He knows what he put into it, and he must know in his heart and soul how he really feels about which is a better screenplay. You know, and to see something else, lesser screenplays, win over his, it must be disheartening.
I think it is, but I also think that. We're learning a really important lesson this year. You know, if you want to win awards, you have to make a certain kind of movie. And I always think about that. Like, I wouldn't want David Fincher ever to make a movie that would win awards. I would love it if he had won for The Social Network, but when you think about it, think of how much he would have to transform his style in order to win an Oscar. And it has to be so vanilla now, because the Oscar race has become like a political election, and this year I've never seen anything like it as I saw this year, the way that Zero Dark Thirty was attacked, the way that Lincoln was attacked. Lincoln was attacked from two different angles. First, they plagiarized this one guy's book and didn't give him credit. It's not even based on Doris Kearns Goodwin's book. It's based on this other book. And then they went after that stupid congressman came out and publicly embarrassed Spielberg, just conveniently as ballots happened to be going out to voters, and then saying, oh, I didn't, and then trying to backtrack on that and say he didn't even know ballots were going out. Oh, please. A call from a publicist to say, okay, now's the time for you to release. I mean, you know, you watch House of Cards, you see how this stuff works. This is how, you know, people win Oscars, and it's naive to think that he just happened to announce it right then. And then on top of that, you had people like Jeff Wells saying it was boring. You had the New York Post reporting from a secret screening that it was just people sitting around talking and all of those people hating hard on it. Kyle Smith, a critic at the New York Post, writing a stupid, regurgitated shit from, you know, 50 years ago that people accuse Lincoln of, smearing President Lincoln, all in the name of Oscar. And then you had on top of that David Carr at the New York Times making a video about basically saying Lincoln's a terrible movie. David Carr, popular, influential David Carr at the New York Times. And then, if that wasn't enough, making another video, walking around the newsroom trying to get people to tell him how bad Lincoln was. I mean, come on. So it's not that surprising that it hasn't won a single award. You know, when you record this stuff and you make people aware of it, they're horrified.
When people like David Carr do things like that, what they do is they make it fun. They make it look like it's fun to hate Lincoln. And that makes and people want a part of that. You know, they want a piece of that action.
That's exactly right. And that's what
it's the cool thing to do.
Yeah, so it became the cool thing to do, and you know what? You can't fight against that, and it doesn't matter if I say, look, here's a fucking out gay writer, Tony Kushner, writing this, inserting himself into the power elite of Hollywood. Here's a woman producer, Kathleen Kennedy, inserting herself into the power elite of Hollywood. And, you know, I might even say, you know, whatever. You could say whatever you want about Spielberg. I'm not going to go there with the anti-Semitism, because I know you can't make that accusation in Hollywood, because they say, oh, everybody's Jewish. And it's partly true, but there is something to be said about people fearing the powerful, rich Jew. And I think that people do fear Steven Spielberg inexplicably for no reason. He's just this almighty, powerful Spielberg. And that was the case back in The Color Purple. But people were saying the same thing, that he masterminded some manipulation back then. And there was fear of the Spielberg even then. And so I forgot where I was going with that.
He has so much power, he can do whatever he wants to do, and I think that makes a lot of people, there's just a lot of just plain jealousy involved in when someone has that much power, that they can do whatever they want and have pretty much carte blanche to make any kind of movie that they want.
But, I mean, you can't look at the Oscar race in terms of evening the score, but it does bother me that, once again, it's a movie about white men, and the women are basically non-existent in Argo. It's written and produced and directed by white men, and it's being voted on primarily by white men. And women love it too, by the way. But it's just weird to me that it's the power elite, the status quo, over and over and over again. And probably one of the Lincoln team's biggest mistakes, I think, was not putting Kushner and Kathleen Kennedy out at the forefront and talking about them in terms of how they're, you know, how they politically can change the landscape of the Oscars, just their mere presence. And you can count the number of out gay writers who've won Oscars. Has there ever even been a single gay director who's won that was out?
Out, I don't think. Schlesinger might have been out right, just among his friends, but I don't think it was very well known back then for Midnight Cowboy.
But anyway, the point I'm just making is that, once again, the status quo rules, and, you know, it does bother me, but nobody really wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to hear me talk about it, so I have to just keep my mouth shut. But it does bother me that that people aren't treating Tony Kushner with the respect he deserves, frankly. Pulitzer Prize winner. He has, you know, he's written just a few screenplays in his life. It took him, you know, 6 years to write Lincoln. But I'll stop talking about it now. I'm sure it's boring
people. Well, the criticism that bothers me is that they act like that Spielberg and Kushner both kind of like bungled and made some mistakes, as if they didn't think every single line of that movie through over the past 10 years, as if they haven't parsed every word and every scene and decided and thought about all the different options and decided that they – on the options that they chose were the best way to go, and now people are trying to second-guess them about silly things like the ending still. It just really aggravates me that people think that they can second-guess something like that.
Yeah.
That they can tell someone said on site yesterday that maybe this will teach Spielberg a lesson. Good grief.
I know. Someone said that. That's the thing. It's like they're falling into that trap of thinking that the awards validation means something, that does define good and bad, and it really
doesn't. Yeah, I mean, and exactly. And a director or writer is going to think, oh, well, I didn't win the Oscar for this, so I've got to change what I'm doing because I must be doing something wrong. No way.
I know, and to think that The Master, let's just take The Master, for instance. We all three, Craig, you didn't like The Master that much, right? Or
not as much as you guys did.
Okay, yeah. I was just going to say that, like, the fact that it wasn't nominated for Best Picture, Best Director is absolutely not an indication of how good it was. And we know that's a fact, right? I mean, it doesn't matter that...
Right. It reflects poorly on the nominating bodies. It doesn't reflect poorly on the film at all.
Right. So that's what I'm trying to get us all to remember and trying to remind myself of this. And the petty squabbles that I have on Twitter and with Jeff Wells and Lou Luminick and these kind of guys who are so ready to just say, you were wrong, ha, ha, ha. You know, I have to just get over that and try to, like, you know.
It becomes like a football team. You know, it doesn't. You choose your favorites, but it doesn't really mean anything if that team actually does win or loses. It's no. It's meaningless. It's something you're not personally involved in. So, but it's treated the same way.
It would be easier to remember that it's meaningless if these people were. It's not as if that you're taking it so personally until they start coming at you with the nagging "I told you so" kind of thing. Then it does become very personal. Can it not be personal when people are coming at you with stuff like that? We don't do that to other people, to other bloggers. We do that.
I definitely don't. Think of how I could dine out on the Les Mis shit that went on.
I know.
Everybody's saying it was going to sweep and win Best Picture, and the reviews were going to be great and everything. And now all of a sudden, I'm the crazy one.
You know, not anymore. I did maybe a little bit at first, but we never really mocked Jeff about his infatuation with Silver Linings.
I have. Maybe not on the podcast, but in my own private life, I have.
Yeah, I remember, too. Jeff thought that was going all the way. I mean,
we got in a big fight about it, actually, because I said, no way can that movie win the Oscar. But what I didn't know then is what I know now, which is the Weinstein's ability to totally transform that campaign. Like, look at what they've done with it now. It started out as just being a silly romantic comedy that they were trying to tie to football. Do you remember?
Mm-hmm. How they were tying it and now to it's football? Got four acting nominations.
And then, four acting nominations, and it also, now it's mental health. Oh, forget football. Forget football. Mental health. Let's go to Washington, you know. And I have to admit that line, that strategy works. You know, who can get mad about a guy with an autistic mood disorder son? You know,
and even the TV commercials now. Have you seen the recent ads for Silver Linings? They make it look like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I mean, it's really serious looking now. It's nothing like the movie.
They do not.
They do. It's really intense. It's like all about his mental problems on the TV ads now. It's very serious. It's not like a comedy.
Wow, that's a trip.
It is.
That is a trip that they're doing it that way. I'm amazed. I am amazed. And like I said, like, the urgency is off of it now, because the only tiny problem with Silver Linings winning is gross Jeff Wells being happy about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's the only tiny problem. Like, if Lincoln isn't going to win, I don't give a fuck what wins at this point. I really don't. It could be Silver Linings. I don't even care. But how great would it be if Life of Pi won? Of course it won't. Dumb actors are never going to pick Life of Pi, you know?
Oh, that would have been great. You know, I went way out on a limb last night or the night before when we were doing Predict the BAFTAs, and I was predicting Life of Pi to win like 7 or 8 categories. Mm. And you told me, well, that's a pretty good strategy, because, you know, if you lay your money on all the numbers, one of them is sure to come up.
Right.
And so I did get a couple right, but I got so many wrong.
Yeah, I know, me too. I knew that it was going to be Affleck for picture and director. The fact that they nominated him for actor. I mean, director and pick. Yeah, the fact that they nominated him for actor showed that they really loved the movie, and I think they loved it even above and beyond the Affleck snub. Like, I think they just loved Argo. Like, they just like it. It's a movie that plays really well internationally.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my foreign Twitter fans love Argo because it translates to them. It's a Hollywood they understand. It's they get the jokes, you know. Mm-hmm. And Lincoln's not a film that translates very well. You know, it just doesn't. It's so
worth, for one thing, unless your command of English is really, really, really good, you're going to miss out on a lot of the words and the vocabulary, plus being a vocabulary that is transported back 150 years old, the vernacular and the lingo is so different. Unless you're pretty adept with that sort of thing, international audiences are not going to follow it very well.
Right. And they don't. They definitely don't. And they've said so. You know, some people do. Like, it's made $200 million internationally,
yeah,
which isn't bad.
Yeah. I'm always doing this backup thing because I say things and then I want to double check. It is true that Ben Affleck's next movie is going to be something called Live by Night. It's a Dennis Lehane novel about the Prohibition era and gangsters and stuff.
Great.
Like that. So
that's fantastic. So that,
yeah, and you know, Dennis Lehane wrote Shutter Island and he wrote Gone Baby Gone.
Yeah, so that's the Ben Affleck director that I like.
Yeah.
I like that guy. Like, I don't like the Argo guy. And you know, I was confirmed, my suspicions were confirmed when George Clooney was on the red carpet at the BAFTA, and he said that, you know, he had worked on the project for like 5 years and then hired Ben Affleck. They basically didn't want him to deviate from the script at all, and Ben Affleck agreed. He didn't want to do it either. He wanted to kind of follow the script. Mm-hmm. And as a result, he's made his sort of least... distinctive movie to date. And what I like about Argo, what I've always liked about it, is it does blend the things that he's really good at that he usually keeps out of his movies. Like, he's Ben Affleck's really funny. He's mm-hmm. got a great sense of humor. If you ever see him talk, he's got that funny thing. Like, he's
cute. And you know what? I didn't know this. Maybe you knew that or had heard about it. But did you know that Affleck has got a degree in Middle Eastern studies from Delaware University?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
It is. He's really smart and he's really funny. All I was trying to say in my stumbling was that I like how Argo brings in his funniness, his humor. And that's mm-hmm. one of the things I really liked about the movie.
His charm.
And his charm. And he is damn good looking, dude. In real life, oh my God. But, you know, he can't be beat. Jesus Christ, he's like the golden boy. So I, you know, I'm totally fine with it. I my only catch is I wish it had a director nomination to go with it, and I wish he was winning that way, and that we weren't having to make Oscar history and remove that stat and make the other five directors just stand there with their dick in their hands.
You know? And I have the same sort of apprehension that you have, that if they do this, they may think, well, it's okay to do it from now on. And maybe director and picture don't have to match up. And I think that they do. I think it's important that they do. It doesn't make sense to me that they don't.
Well, Driving Miss Daisy is seen as one of the worst, one of the worst Oscar Best Pictures ever. And that's part of the reason.
Yeah.
So, to win Best Picture without director, the only difference really between them is that Ben Affleck is a star and he's somebody we all know and people know him. So they feel like somebody they know got snubbed. Bruce Beresford was from Australia. Nobody knew him from Adam. They knew Jessica Tandy and Morgan Freeman, and that's what they were relating to.
I forgot that it was his name. I forgot who directed it.
I think Ben Affleck has a bright future, and I think he'll do just fine. I do think that people will...
He's an up-and-comer.
I think that people will be embarrassed by this year when they look back on it, though. I really do. I'll always think that they will not think it's a bad movie, but it won't wear well over time because it beat all these other good movies, sadly. But, oh well. So, House of Cards. Should we talk about it quickly?
Yeah, you really like it a lot more than I did. I think that Craig doesn't. I like it better than Craig likes it.
No, I didn't. I grew to like it after.
Okay, cool.
Right. It was the first two episodes that I didn't like, and then it started to click in the third episode, and I'm liking it fine. I've only watched five so far, but it's good. Once I let go of wanting it to be like the original, I started to warm up to it.
That's what I need to do, and I've only seen the first two episodes, so that's all I know about. So if it gets better, then I'm in for a treat.
It gets way better.
Okay, cool. Great. Good to know.
Oh, my God, does it get good. Right about episode 8? Episode 8, 9, 10, 11. The last two are the best ones, but leading up to those, have you guys met Corey Stoll yet? Has he come on yet in the ones you've seen?
Yeah.
You see Corey Stoll.
Yeah, he's in the very first one, isn't he?
I think so. I can't remember, but he's like, him and Robin Wright are like two of the best characters, and their character arcs are really interesting. And a lot of different directors are used, so it's like Carl Franklin does episode 10, and James Foley does a few, and
Joel Schumacher did a couple.
Some guy, Connie.
Yeah, him and then another guy are kind of two no names. But they're good. They're good. I've watched the whole thing now twice, all the way through, and I'm digging it so hard. I really wish it had part two up right now and I could finish watching it to see what happens, because I just love the way the power shifts around. And I actually really love being like with Kevin Spacey, like being his cohort along the way, you know, because he talks to you. And at first I was kind of bothered by that, because we're used to watching characters to see what they're feeling from the outside in. But in House of Cards, like, he talks to us, so we're kind of in it with him. And so he's not going to be too expressive to us, because we're in it with him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a while to get the rhythm of that, I think, but once you
I still haven't quite warmed up to that part of it yet. Ian Richardson did the same thing in the original, and he did a better job of it. But
he did a better job because I think the script was a little more it didn't use it so much as a gimmick, I think. But I can't really say after only two episodes whether it's going to get how it didn't. It rubs me a little bit the wrong way than Kevin Spacey does it.
It did for me too in the first few, but as time wore on, it became almost a relief because as tense as it gets, I'm sort of like into him talking to me and telling me what's happening inside his head. It just gets weirder and weirder. But the other characters are also really interesting in the storylines that they have. I mean,
well, it's a great divide because
I think surpasses the original is that the supporting characters are all really great in American version, whereas Ian Richardson is pretty much the show in the first one.
Exactly right. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, I can't remember really any standouts in the original except Ian Richardson. But there are so many good performances, and I wasn't going to admit this because I felt embarrassed about it. Sasha, I wrote you about it. I was so just sitting there kind of infuriated the first 2 hours thinking, who is this girl trying to act so much like Rooney Mara? Why is she acting her mannerisms and her vocal tone of voice and the way she moves her head? She's just like acting like Mara. It's really aggravating. I didn't realize they were sisters. I had no idea that was her sister.
She's great. She the sex scenes between her and Kevin Spacey are a little bit irritating and bizarre, and I'm glad that I shouldn't spoil it, so I won't. But I found that a lot of people telling me that they don't like those, and I think that's part of the intent. Like, I think it's supposed to bother you. You're supposed to be disgusted by it, you know?
Right.
There's nothing about House of Cards that's particularly comforting. Every character is sort of unpredictable and weird, and there are some that you care about more than others, but boy, does it take no prisoners.
How soon before they have sex? How many episodes do I have to wait before they have sex?
Pretty quick, I think.
Oh, good, good, good.
It's within the first five for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, within the first five. But have you got to the Father's Day one yet, Craig?
No.
Okay, yeah. That's the one that you can't unsee. Seriously.
Her character, Kate Mara's character, is actually my least favorite part of the whole show.
I know. That's what everybody's saying. My sister is like, oh, my God, she irritates me so much. Kate Mara, girl reporter. But her character improves greatly toward the end.
Good.
I'll just say
good.
That much. But I don't like her either, but I love the older lady, the older reporter lady.
Where the show started to click for me was when it became clear that Kevin Spacey's character was actually really, really good at his job. He's not just a good asshole. He's actually a really gifted and talented politician, and the way he juggles things and kind of keeps all of his balls in the air is incredible to watch.
Yeah.
That's when I started really liking it.
I feel the same. It's one of those things where I love the atmosphere. Like, I love dwelling in that world. I knew that from the first few episodes that I was going to like that part of it because the way it's lit, the way that the clothes they wear, the houses. Robin Wright's style is, like, insane. Their haircut and her scarves and her glasses and her dresses. I mean, she's just so well put together and
visually is the only thing that kept me going for so far and then kept me interested in the first two episodes. So I'm really glad to know that it gets that structurally and narratively that it gets better because visually it's amazing.
Yeah. Kate Mara is very cold and weird. Mm. Like I don't know how different the show would be if they picked somebody who was a little more warm fuzzy for that, you know, like, I don't know, somebody that you
Jennifer Lawrence. Somebody, but Jennifer Lawrence's sister, me.
I love Jennifer Lawrence because she reminds me of Emma for some weird reason.
Oh, that's great. That's amazing. That's so cool.
She's just so cute. Like when I saw her in Santa Barbara, she's just such a big, big girl. You know,
she's a goof. She's great.
She's like a big grown up girl. You know, she's not a grown up yet. She's just 22. So she's.
You see her with her parents, I like her more when this time, the interviews I've seen her with her parents making the award circuit with her, I really have warmed up to her a lot since I've seen her, the way she interacts with her family.
I know it's totally not her fault. She's, you know, engorged in the wines.
I know.
But she's so cute. Like when you watch her, she's so unformed. Like she reminds me of Emma. Like she'll just say stuff like girls do, you know, they just talk and then she doesn't care if it's the right thing to say or not, you know. And I know
you can do that when you're really cute. You can just about say anything and get away with it when you're really, really cute.
That's right.
Well, she's also self-effacing and unassuming. She doesn't come across like the pretty girl. She comes across like your younger sister.
She's actually too self-effacing, I think. I think it makes people think she's dumber than she is. She should.
Right.
She doesn't need to go that far overboard. It's like she doesn't want people to think that she thinks she's the greatest thing in the world, so she downplays.
Right.
But in so doing, she talks herself down too much. That's what I noticed from her interview. I was like, come on, girl, grow some balls. You can do better than that. You know, you can tell she's smart. Hell, she was talking about cinematographers. Mm. She could name all the different ones, you know, and you see, you can tell that she's a smart girl. She's either been trained or, you know, conditioned to not act smart.
Did you see how well she handled herself on Letterman?
No, I didn't watch it.
Really, he's sort of like a barometer for me. If an actor can handle themselves with Letterman, then I'm always really impressed with them because he's a hard one. I mean, it takes the right kind of personality to play off of him well, and she pretty much just nailed it. She was like completely charming, let him be funny when he was trying to be funny, took the opportunities for herself to be funny when it was her turn, and it just went really well.
Well, that's good. I looked at her at that interview, and she was having a hard time with the guy at the Santa Barbara Film Festival. She couldn't answer a lot of his questions, and a lot of her answers were not good. Like, he asked her if she'd done theater, and she's like, no, sorry, I haven't. I'm sorry, I haven't done any theater. Because she's just, you know, she doesn't know you're supposed to give certain answers.
An interviewer should really do a little bit of homework in advance, too. You should ask a question like that you can find out on your own.
Right. It seemed like he knew a lot about her, but I think he expected she was going to say she was more trained than she was. Every time he would ask her something like that, she wouldn't be able to say that she could. She just said that she, like, didn't memorize her lines before she got on set and just sort of looked at her lines right before she did the take, that kind of thing. Mm. But at the same time, I could tell from watching her, like so many other women who are thrust into success too early, that in 10 years, she's going to be an incredible person to talk to. You know, she's going to have absorbed so much. She's such a sponge. She doesn't have formal education, but she has natural intelligence and really good instincts. And I can tell that she'll be one of those great women, you know, like Diane Keaton or someone like Goldie Hawn, you know, who are just so well-rounded and interesting, that they didn't need the formal training. As opposed
to
instinct someone like Jessica.
Is the best word for it. She has amazing instincts.
Yeah, totally. And Jessica Chastain is more polished, you know, and articulate and trained and you know, quote unquote, a more of a real actress. But and she's older, obviously. She's in her 30s, so she's had more time to figure out who she is. So they're both great. I think Emmanuel Riva is going to beat them both at the Oscars, though.
I'd be fine with that. I'm still rooting for Chastain, but I'd be fine with that. I'd even be fine if Lawrence wins, because as little as I think of the film, she's great in it.
I don't care either. I have no, like I say, if Lincoln's not going to win, I'm not invested in any other win. It's so sad to say, but it's true. So I don't really care. I would love to see Emmanuel Riva fucking 86 years old, but I don't think she's going to lose. I don't think they're going to invite her all the way to the Oscars and they give it to someone else.
On her birthday, on the night of her birthday.
How low do you have to be to do that?
I know.
So now Weinstein Co. is going to have to find a way to do the Obama thing, that make voters feel less guilty for voting for Matt. Like, what are they going to dredge up?
You tried. You gave her a chance.
It just didn't work out. It's not her fault.
It's an honor just to be nominated, right?
We'll have to see what they're going to pull out of their hat for that one.
Who knows what could happen in the next 2 weeks?
You've been listening to episode 19 of Oscar Podcast with Craig Kennedy from livinginscinema.com, Ryan Adams and Sasha Stone from awardsdaily.com. And the bumper music today was Everyone Else Is an Asshole by Real Big Fish and Smells Like Teen Spirit by Tori Amos. You can follow us on Twitter at Oscar Podcast. Thanks for listening.
Load up on guns, bring your friends, it's fun. To pretend she's overboard and selfish, yet oh no, I know a dirty word. Hello, hello. gift. I feel blessed. A little girl has always been and always will be until the end. Hello, 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 hello. Less dangerous. Here we are now. Entertain us. I feel stupid and contagious. Here we are now. Entertain us. Yes. My libido, a denial.